Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I am Jason Whitlock. That is Marcellus Wiley. That dude.
Yes, sir.
All right, welcome to Speak for Yourself, the most fearless show in sports. Coming up, we'll tell you if Kyrie Irving is the reason the Celtics are on the brink of elimination. We'll be starting the Western Conference Finals, or the Western Conference. The trouble in Golden State runs deeper than Klay Thompson's shooting slump, Steph Curry's inconsistency, Draymond Green's mama's Twitter feed, and Kevin Durant's possible departure. The trouble in Golden State is actually in Houston. It's James Harden. It's P.J. Tucker. It's, dare I say, Mike D'Antoni. The Houston Rockets evened their best of seven playoff series against the Warriors at two games apiece last night, primarily because the Rockets have changed identities. Yeah, they jacked up 53-pointers in a 112-108 victory. They're still the rootin', tootin', shootin'est team in the West, but they've added a layer of toughness that shocks me. James Harden is tough. Last week, I mocked his eye injury. I said he was more interested in sympathy than championships. Boy, was I wrong. Harden's injured bloodshot left eye is the reason the Rockets have climbed back into this series. Harden's injury and his relentless performance on the other side of it have changed the identity of the Rockets. They're tough. They're unselfish. P.J. Tucker is now Houston's second most important player, not Chris Paul, not Eric Gordon. Tucker's rebounding, defensive effort on Kevin Durant, and Tucker's timely three-point shooting are the reason Houston just might win this series. Tucker's Houston's Draymond Green, except Tucker is a more reliable shooter and more emotionally stable than Draymond. Last night, Tucker led the Rockets in minutes with 42 and plus-minus at plus 11. After the game, Chris Paul declared that the Rockets will have to play better in order to win at Golden State. It makes sense, and it's certainly what I would be saying if I had a max contract and just scored 14 and 13 points in the two games my team won. But I don't think Paul's sentiment is true. All four games in this series have been close and have been won by the team who played the toughest. There's plenty of skill on both teams. Durant versus Harden is basically a wash. Paul and Eric Gordon have held their own versus Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. This Rockets-Warriors series isn't about skill, it's being decided by will. Harden and Tucker are displaying a stronger will to win than the Warriors. As long as that's the case, I like the Rockets to win this series in seven games. All right, joining the desk now is Fox Sports NBA analyst Jim Jackson and Rick Bucher of Bleacher Report. Marcellus, I'll start with you. Are the Warriors in real trouble here?
Oh, yeah, they're in real trouble. I mean, but that's based off the expectations if you're the Warriors. You got to remember who you're facing and when you're going out there, your opponent, and what their mindset is. We know that Houston is all about the math and Daryl Morey and hit the threes or go to the free throw line or get to the rim. And they're winning in the math and they're winning in the mentality. But if you're Golden State, you should expect this. This is a team that thought that they really beat you last year, but they had the injury to Chris Paul. So when you're facing that team, there's nothing you're gonna do to walk into that arena and scare those guys. There are no points on that scoreboard before you actually lace them up. So this is a team that's looking at you like you're not invincible. And a lot of teams give up points to the Warriors just in mentality, just in going against this team and how dynastic they are. So, yeah, the Warriors are in real trouble coming into this series facing a talented, deeper team that already thought that they had their number.
Warriors may be in trouble, but it's not in this series. Up until the last 2 minutes. Yes, but up until the last 2 minutes of last night's game, I would have said, man, Rockets have figured something out. They have found that confidence. And then they took me back to game 7 of last year, which is, it's time to close out. Wait a minute, how do we close out a champion? We've never closed out a champion before. Let's hope one of these threes goes in. And they changed their whole demeanor. I saw a champion's pride in the Golden State Warriors saying, oh, no, 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 let's go get this because we started our best lineup. We need to make this a short series. Now, they failed in that, and that does cause some concern, if not in this series, certainly down the line. But the Rockets have not demonstrated. You said in your soliloquy, which I enjoy, you said the problem is in Houston. You're right. It's in Houston. That's where the Rockets have demonstrated that toughness. That's where they've demonstrated that urgency. They didn't demonstrate that in the first two games in Golden State. So until I see PJ Tucker and their complementary players take that game on the road, I'm not convinced that they have enough to get this done.
What? I came back you up.
What?
I came back you up.
Yo, yo.
And because a toughness, yes, but what made this Golden State team so tough in the past was that when Curry went out, when Klay went out, when Durant went out, the bench came in and they had support. Right now, that's not the case. Right now, Houston's bench is outscoring Golden State's 19-10. More importantly, Houston's bench is shooting 34% from the three-point line, which is outshooting Golden State, period.
Right.
Okay? So it's the complementary players. And I'm going to take it back to a conversation we had before. Golden State's success made everybody else step up their game. Okay, from a starter's perspective, but who you had coming in on the bench. So right now, the league has caught up somewhat, okay, from that perspective, while Golden State fell back from the bench perspective. So the beauty of Golden State is like, listen, we got home court advantage. Okay, you won your two games at home. Now it's a three-game series with two of ours being at home. So we take care of home court no matter what you do, Houston. Yeah. We still walk out of this series, even if it's seven games, on to the Western
Conference. That still sounds like trouble because you won the first game by 6, second game by 4, and in that situation, the toughness wasn't in play like it's been in Houston. So Houston goes back, performs the same, but as the layer of toughness on the road, that's what we're talking about.
But it's supposed to be serious. It's supposed to be trouble. It's not supposed to be easy. Houston is supposed to take them. Houston is supposed to fight because you know why? They are the hunters. They are the ones that are going to scrap to pull to do everything. And Golden State, Draymond said it. Say, listen, they fighting a different kind of fight. We got to step up to that. If I'm trying to beat the champion, that's what I have to do. So I expect that from Houston.
I think, and look, I could be proven wrong over the coming days, but I just think James Harden has been this three-point shooter and a flopper and a guy that gets to the free throw line and all this other stuff. But on the other side of this eye injury, which, again, I misread and misjudged, it's a legitimate injury. I think his teammates, Chris Paul and everybody else, looks at him a little bit different, like, oh, man, this dude is for real. He has a level of toughness that I don't think other people gave him credit for. And I've looked at this team, particularly P.J. Tucker, who's always been tough, take on more of James's identity, and that was the difference in these last two games. I didn't know if James knew he had this in him, but he's just not going out like that. I think he and the team are different in the aftermath of this injury.
I do believe that look, I think he's always played physically from an offensive standpoint. And so I think it's a matter of mental toughness more than anything else.
What?
And he's fought through that. But again, the end of that game is what really, he suddenly looked tentative. Chris Paul looked tentative. Mm-hmm. They didn't have the same energy or motion. And the one troubling part you mentioned.
It almost sounds like they missed the wide open three-pointer.
They were up 10 with 2 minutes left, and it became a one-possession game. It should have never come to that, and it did, not because Golden State was stopping them, but because they were settling for threes. They were suddenly pounding the ball in one place, and then clock short, I got to put something up. That's not how they got there. They got there with that aggression going to the cup when they were closing out. They didn't do that in the last minute or two. And to me, meanwhile, you could see the Warriors were like, oh, we're going to get after this now. They should not have had an opportunity. They had an opportunity to push that game to overtime. Mm-hmm. They never should have had that, and they had it not just because of the Warriors. The Warriors are not going to beat themselves, but because the Rockets let the door open.
But I'll tell you what a coach would say in those moments, that we can't find our way based on their failure. So if I'm Golden State, I have no confidence going into game five saying, we're going to wait for them to start pounding the ball, getting away from their game plan. That's when we thrive. So that you got to have consistency when you have game plan to have confidence. So Golden State right now doesn't have confidence in their game plan. They can say post up KD. They say KD, get your own shot. But they don't have consistency when it comes to Steph. They don't have consistency when it comes to Klay right now. So right now, they're not knowing
or even style of attack, which you just laid out.
Yeah.
They went with a different style last night, which I thought was better.
Right.
But that, to me, is like they made the counter move because they've lost confidence.
But the biggest problem is not at the offensive end. It's defensively that they can't make stops. They went at – this is the first time I've ever seen somebody go at Draymond Green.
Holy.
They went at Draymond Green. They went at – but they've been going at Steph,
Steph
the whole time.
Every time.
They went at Klay Thompson. Like, they had certain matchups. The only one that they went away from, which says a lot about where KD is right now, that was the one they rejected and said, let's go get something else.
It was amazing what KD did. He took on the challenge.
Well, he did, too, and he pushed, you know, Steph when they tried to set a screen with Eric Gordon. He pushed him away. But here's the difference, too. Not having someone to protect the rim allows now Houston to attack.
Yes.
Okay.
If they do.
If they do. And what – I'm going to go back to this. Again – I know Mike D'Antoni, I played for him. Down the stretch of the game to make the kind of plays you need to make to win in Golden State. Forget Houston.
Yeah.
To win in Golden, that's what concerns me. Because like Rick talked about, the three-point shots at the end of the game were shots that Houston allowed themselves to take. It wasn't things that Golden State did. Mm. And to me, to go on the road to beat Golden State, you got to continue to put pressure on the defense, make them make decisions. If you don't do that, you're going to bail them out. You're going to shoot long shots, which allows them to get out and run.
Mm-hmm. Jim, you do know that before these last two games, I think Golden State had won 11 straight on the road. They've shown weakness and vulnerability this season at home more so than on the road.
But that's okay. Here's my point, though. This is a different kind of series when something is on the line. Houston, during the regular season, dominated Golden State. But so what? That didn't matter on those first two games because it's a different consequence when you lose. It's a different kind of pressure in the playoffs. And that's what I'm saying. We haven't seen that from Houston yet in Golden State that they can get over the hump. And they're going to do that by being consistent in what they do early in the game and do that late.
Let me throw you a lifeline. This is the one. This is the one question that I have.
Yep.
The Warriors got 46 minutes out of their bench. Points and statistics aside, 46 minutes. Now, the Rockets don't play a deep rotation, but they got 60-plus. You are going to count in this whatever game five, game seven, whatever is at home, you need something out of Alphonso McKinney. You need something out of Kevon Looney.
Yep.
Now, they're actually the guy that hasn't been talked about right now, going the cheap on Patrick McCaw. How much would they love having Patrick McCaw as a piece that they could go to or they could start so they could still bring Andre Iguodala off the bench? Their problem is they don't have any playmakers coming off the bench, and they used to have both Sean Livingston and Andre Iguodala as options. Now it's we got to start our best five just to stay in the game. That's what concerns me as this series moves forward.
All right, so what's a – and I think you guys have already answered this, but I want to ask it, get it more direct. Mm-hmm. What's a bigger problem for the Warriors? The Rockets and this new confidence the Rockets have, or is the problem with Golden State?
For me, it's Golden State. It's a matter of that they don't have a bench. You've got to play Steph Curry 43 minutes. Mm-hmm. He's going to be targeted every opportunity that they get. That takes him away. That means KD is going to be more of your playmaker. And – that doesn't get everybody else involved. That kind of limits what you do. But I can't go away from it because KD can get his shot anytime. So now that rhythm and that game that they had that they could fall back on, now they're kind of figuring it out as they go along, which puts them in a different realm than you would normally have a team that is playing for a third consecutive championship.
Yeah, I would say it's the Warriors as well. As great as the Rockets are playing, especially these last two games at home, and we know how good they play at home, if you're the Warriors, you just have too many star players that can form the Voltron you need to just overcome what you're facing in terms of Houston. Houston, if you think about all the great championship teams in recent times, you go back, you can go to Magic and Kareem, you can go to Jordan and Pippen, Shaq and Kobe, wherever you want to go. You've never heard Harden and P.J. Tucker, if you want to. No disrespect, right. P.J. Tucker, but brother, that's not how it goes. So when we're hearing, you know, Clay and Steph and then KD and Steph, like, Houston is in trouble. They have to maximize all of their efforts and play above their heads just to even stay in this.
And they need Golden State to fall off.
Yeah.
That's ultimately what they need.
They fall off because, one, fatigue, okay, because now you got to play your starters extended minutes. Second, Golden State's best offense is when they have ball movement, okay? Listen, they're going to be able to get to the paint. If I'm Golden State and I'm Steve Kerr, going into game five, we're going to attack the paint, attack the paint. Okay, they want to give us twos, we're going to take twos. Hmm. Eventually, they're going to start to leak in. Eventually, they're going to sink in because they're tired of giving up layups. That's when those open, consistent three-point shots are going to come. But to me, it's changing the mind. Golden State beat you. Not just by threes. They beat you because they got easy layups. Mm-hmm. That's how Golden State used to beat you.
I think the problem is in Houston. I said that off the top. I gotta sit here and give Mike D'Antoni credit. There was a basket right before halftime. Golden State tried to get away with putting Jordan Bell in the game.
Jordan Bell and Kevon Looney on the floor. And
every point counts. Mm-hmm. And they exploited that immediately. That to me, that playing that kind of smart, relentless, efficient. That's what I didn't ever expect from D'Antoni, James Harden, these guys. Houston's a real problem, man. Mm-hmm. The matchup between PJ and Draymond Green is being won by PJ in a landslide, in my opinion. Mm. And if that continues,
not by the numbers, but I hear you. Not by the numbers. He's averaging 9 points.
Draymond has some bad turnovers, but if you he has some bad turnovers. But if you look at what he's been able to do through this series,
yes.
He's a different player. Now, PJ is going to knock down shots because he loves to corner three, got offensive rebounds. But Draymond, with his assists, with his rebounds, and he's made some shots, those big basket. Who is PJ stopping?
You can't stop Kevin Durant. He's a problem. He's an annoyance.
Yeah, so is Draymond.
It's funny that.
I love both of them.
He's not stopping KD, so let's stop that. So defensively, you're still going to get neutralized. Offensively, he's playing worse than he did in the Utah series. We forget game one, he had donut. Like, donut.
That's what
he had 0 points. So let's not get all in love, enamored with people.
Throw him another lifeline.
Come on, man.
When Houston wins this series, I'm going to bring y'all.
When they win it, we go in the Mastro. I'm taking you. I know you like that.
You know what's not smart? Job boards that send you candidates that aren't qualified for the role you posted or send you a mile-high stack of resumes to sort through. But you know what is smart? Going to ZipRecruiter.com/speak to hire the right person. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates for you. Its powerful matching technology scans thousands of resumes to identify people with the right skills, education, and experience, and actively invites them to apply to your job so you get qualified candidates fast. That's why ZipRecruiter is rated number one by employers in the U.S. This rating comes from hiring sites on Trustpilot with over 1,000 reviews. And right now, Speak for Yourself listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/speak. If you love this show, show your support to it and ZipRecruiter by going to ZipRecruiter.com/SPEAK. That's ZipRecruiter.com/speak. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Jim Jackson and Rick Bucher are back with us. Time now for a big story brought to you by Fisher Investments. All right, let's move to Boston, where Giannis had a huge night, dropping 39 points and 16 boards as the Bucks took a 3-1 lead over the Celtics last night. Meanwhile, Kyrie Irving had another ice-cold game, shooting around 30% from the field, including just 1 of 7 from three, and was asked about his recent shooting woes after the game.
Yeah, who cares? Who cares? I'm a basketball player. Prepare the right way. You know, the expectations on me are going to be sky high. And I try to utilize their aggression against them and still put my teammates in great positions while still being aggressive. I'm trying to do it all. So, you know, for me, the 22 shots, you know, I should have shot 30. You know, it really, I'm not great of a shooter. So I think that just the consistency of just going at it, staying aggressive is always going to put us in a great position.
All righty, gentlemen. Good Bucks or bad Celtics? What's this series about?
Horrible Celtics. Kyrie Irving hasn't had a worse three-game stretch in the playoffs in his career. Think about it. Your best player is playing his worst he's ever played in postseason. No team in any sport is going to win when your best player is giving you his worst ever. Two, Gordon Hayward. What the hell is Brad Stevens allowing him still to go out there on rehab duty for 27 minutes and giving him 2 points? They're getting outscored by the bench. Giannis in foul trouble. Then all of a sudden, we put the bench out there, and they wide the lead. And last but not least, I have to go to coach, the genius, Brad Stevens, mismanaging not only the minutes but the personalities. You got guys sitting there saying, Kyrie get free reign, taking minutes, taking shots, bricking it up, and I want to try to get mine. So it's just really a circus affair out there in Boston. It's all bad Boston.
If there's one guy that they're missing, it's Marcus Smart to me. But
he played last night.
To your point.
He's the difference?
To me, he could be. Because you need some leadership in that locker room. That is what they're missing. And they're not getting it from Brad Stevens, and they're not getting it from Kyrie Irving. I can't separate the two. You know, we talk about players being set-up guys, or we talk about them being closers. The same applies with coaches. And we have anointed Brad Stevens as a great coach already.
Yes.
Because he took underachieving teams, under-talented teams.
Stop it.
To the Eastern Conference Finals the last 2 years.
Took Butler to back-to-back.
That's right.
National championship.
That's
the man
right.
Can coach.
That's
now.
Right.
Stop it.
There's a difference between coaching Butler and coaching teams that are missing stars or in a bad Eastern Conference. You go back to 2000, I don't want to go back too much history, but you go back to 2016-17 when they went to the conference finals the first time and they had a bunch of no-names. If Rajon Rondo doesn't get hurt, they are a first seed that's getting knocked out by the eighth seed of Chicago Bulls.
They were down to
it. Took them 17. It took them 7 games to get past the Washington Wizards.
Yeah.
And then they got run by a Cleveland Cavaliers team that, by the way, couldn't stand up to the Golden State Warriors.
Mm-hmm.
So how good are they really, and how good is Brad Stevens? There's a distinction between coaching decent guys and making them very good or overachievers, and then there's coaching talent. You have to be a psychologist more than an X's and O's guy. And that is what they are missing with this team. Kyrie Irving has not been a leader. That was only more evidence of it. I should have taken 8 more shots. Your decision-making was horrendous. I'm not talking about the number of shots you took. I'm talking about when you took them. You're down by double digits, and now you're going 1-on-3. Even if you make that shot, it's not a good shot. They're not getting it from Kyrie. They're not getting it from Brad. Marcus Smart is my – I'm throwing myself a lifeline here because he's the one guy who has shown me in the past that in the playoffs that he can be a leader in difficult situations, and he's not 100%.
Well, here's the issue, too. To me, it's all about Milwaukee, but let me kind of extend your point. Early in the year when Boston was struggling, we had a game and we covered Boston and Philly, and I said the challenge with Brad Stevens is he has to deal with these egos. He hasn't had to deal with that before. He had guys that would buy in to what he was selling because marginally they weren't as talented. So they bought in Butler and early on in Boston. Now you got to deal with all these egos. So during the regular season, you're managing minutes, you're managing injuries, and you're managing egos, okay? Now you get to the point here, people expect that all of a sudden it's all it was supposed to come back together for Boston. No, this Milwaukee Bucks team has been doing this all year. Their average margin of victory is the highest in the league. Their bench has been producing. The guys have gotten better and settled into their role. So as much as it's about Boston playing bad, forget that. It's about how good this Milwaukee team is based on what they've done all year. Again, they weren't sexy enough during the course of the year because the storylines wasn't there outside of Giannis, like Boston and like Toronto.
But, Jimmy, there was a game one. And for whatever.
But that's okay.
There was a game one.
But you know what?
And
was.
What flipped it? And
it
what flipped
was.
It? What
it's flipped 3-1 it? Right now. Because you know what? They got their feet wet and they understood how to attack and play this Boston team. Okay, Boston did what they were supposed to do.
Right.
They came in and got it. Now you're talking about coaching, making adjustments, bench playing better, guys understanding playoff basketball. Now they settled in and said, you know what? I'm going to invert our big man. I'm going to let Giannis go to work. If he doesn't have a good game, these are the guys that are stepping up.
Right, that's now. Without Brogdon.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
50-40-90.
Brad in game four, called timeouts every time you needed a timeout. The problem was they would come out of the timeout and the problem wasn't fixed. They still were going each one-on-one.
Yep.
There was no continuity in their offense. And defensively, if
they
show
Kyrie more than Brad?
Because there's never been a pecking order established in terms of if we're going to go with Kyrie. I kind of agree with him in this. If Kyrie's going to be your guy and you're going to let him go and do what he's going to do, then let him go. But the problem is he'll do it. He'll take a couple of shots. Okay, well, Jason Tatum's now going to take a shot. Now Jaylen Brown's going to take a shot. They were all going one-on-one. If I'm going to go with my best player, then I'm going to establish this is my best player and I'm going that approach. There is no hierarchy. And I've been told by someone close to the Celtics that Brad doesn't establish a pecking order. That's what I was waiting for all year. You have this collection of guys, all who feel that they should play a certain role. But you know what? Not everybody gets to play the role that they think they should. And if I watch one more highlight of Giannis Antetokounmpo stepping hard right and spinning back left, and the second defender is 6 feet away, he's not going to stop and hit a step back. He's going one direction when he makes that move, and the Celtics collectively cannot stop that. I'm sorry. That, to me, is coaching. Or it's, I can't get through to my players what I need them to do at the defensive end. I hate putting it all on the coaches because it is a player's league. But in this case, the talent is not living up to what they're capable of doing, and it's because of how they're executing. And that I am going to put on Brad Stevens' plate.
The pecking order, I think, is a lot harder to establish when Kyrie missed so much last season.
Yep.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm.
And then he comes, they had the success, and he comes back. And so it's hard to establish a pecking order. We just had success without you. So, again, it sounds like I'm making excuses for Brad Stevens, but, man, his resume is pretty damn strong at both levels. And so you got one guy that thinks the earth is flat and a lot of other things. He's a different dude.
Yeah.
He thinks that he's a little bit harder to reach than others. And he's not 6'10", 6'11". When you're 6'10", 6'11", 6'9", like LeBron, it's easier to set a pecking order. You see that big dude over here, Giannis, LeBron, KD? That's our pecking order.
You know what? But they're not getting beat just by Giannis. They're getting beat by their
George Hill.
George Hill was more of a genius in this last game.
I mean,
Pat Connaughton. I mean, they're getting it from a lot of different places. So this idea that it's all on Kyrie, I go back to this. The Celtics, if you give me the two rosters, the Celtics have the better roster. But they are not playing like it.
Yeah, they're playing less than the sum of its parts, which always puts the onus on the coach. Because you have the collective group. I would tell you, just being in that locker room, if I were there and I saw Gordon Hayward getting 26 minutes a game because of business reasons and we're trying to get him back in order, I understand that. But if you're coming off the bench and you have to earn the minutes you get because there are other guys who are taking less minutes who deserve them. So when you see them not helping on defense and the disinterest and them not playing with the toughness of Houston, it's because guys are sitting there like, they're really disgruntled, and they're acting it out on the court. When they face adversity, you can see it through every run, through every timeout, fix the problem. You don't respond to adversity when you're disinterested.
We're going to get to it later in the show because there's a factor here that we're not talking about that we're going to talk about later. But when your star player has spent all year flirting about where he may play next year, that makes things a little harder too. Rick Bucher is back. We're joined now by Fox NFL analyst Greg Jennings. Let's move to the NFL, where Le'Veon Bell is with a new team, but it looks like he may be the same old guy, not attending the Jets' voluntary practices so far this offseason. His absence has left a lot of fans wondering when he was going to join the team, so Le'Veon responded to one on Instagram and posted his response on Twitter, explaining that he would show up, quote, when it's time to play football. I got to stick to the formula that I know works for me to be the best player I can be. I'm not just trying to win football games. I want a ring. I want to desperately show everybody what I can really do.
Man, stop.
I'll take the heat right now. Everybody will forget about that once January comes around. All right, that's Le'Veon Bell with a long-winded excuse for Man, I ain't going to none of these voluntary practices.
You holla.
That's not me.
You heard.
That's not what I do.
Nope.
I'm really not about winning. I'm about this check, and I got the check that I got, and I'm good.
I wish he'd just admit that first. Let's start there. Like me, I'm about the money, man. Respect Greg Jennings in that ring, but you know what? I'll go to Stone and get mine. You know what I'm saying? I can do what I got to do. I feel like a winner when I check them checks cash. So it's amazing when I see guys try to go off of that and talk about January. You play for the Jets. Ain't no damn January then. Like, nobody's buying that. But I am with him when he talks about I'll be ready, because he's always ready. Respect that. And strength coaches suck. I told you this before, I'm going to tell you this again. This one-size-fits-all model where everybody, all 53, come here together, is some former D lineman that just learned how to squat who's now got a job with the organization. He's not a movement-integrated performance specialist with a PhD. He's not one of these guys like a Mike Boyle out there and guys that you go to pay extra money who know how to take care of you. He's not Tom Brady, Alex Guerrero, where they actually know there's a void in the marketplace, so let's teach you a different philosophy how to take care of your body. Why go there and do what everybody else is doing? You're not like everyone else. So I respect that he's still going to get his work in.
Yeah, for me, it's not a red flag for the Jets, simply because you got to know your personnel. When you bring in Adam Gase, you know what he is about. He's a quarterback guy, but he's also a player's guy who understands what he has when he brings in and they bring in a Le'Veon Bell. Is it a bad look? Yes, it's a bad look, because you want your young guys to see a guy that just comes in and just does his work. But what Le'Veon Bell has always done, it has worked for him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care. Don't give me he's been out a year.
Except when he's suspended, it doesn't work.
You're right, but his work ethic has proven to translate to the football field. And so for him to miss, it's not a bad look or a red flag for the Jets. However, I think it would be best for the guys around him to see how he works.
It's worked with the Steelers. This is a brand new team. You are coming in as one of the highest players. You're not just a guy. You are the guy. You're not a third wide receiver. You're not a nickel corner. You're supposed to be the guy that elevates this team and elevates a very young quarterback with a brand new head coach. Whether he's in the weight room or not, the idea that not being there, not being present, not developing a camaraderie, you skipped out on your last team and turned off your offensive linemen. Now you're showing up and you're making big money with a new team, and you're not showing up and saying, hey, I'll be ready because this works for me. Those were the three most important words that he said. This works for me. Well, the Jets, if you're talking about rings, it's not what works just for you. It's what works for us.
Well, let's talk about rings. Tom Brady's missed 4 and counting of these same OTAs, voluntary workouts. And we're going to say, well, he has the rings now. But guess what? It's a new team every single year. There's no such thing as repeating because there's not the same roster.
Ain't Tom Brady. Stop.
And he's not Tom Brady, right? Stop. So let's not talk about motivation and how young players need to learn from him. The motivation game is assured by the NFL by non-guaranteed contracts. Trust me, brother, I don't need to see how Jason Whitlock works, because I got to get all of mine, because there's no guarantee I'll even be here or there will be a pot of gold at the end of this road.
For me, it really isn't about the red flag being for the Jets. Again, I don't have a problem with him not being there. The problem that I do have with it is the role that he's going to take on with this team as far as leadership.
Thank you.
Just looking at him as a leader. How he approaches that is going to be to his own discretion. Now, he puts in work, and Marcellus, you know this, it doesn't matter what you do, what you've done. The statement that he said, I'll take the heat right now. Mm-hmm. He said, but everybody will forget about that once January comes. As long as he does that.
Yeah, you know that.
We don't care about nothing you're doing.
But listen, I think one thing we have to recognize, and again, this is a point on Le'Veon's side. The athletes, because of Charles Barkley, became comfortable saying, I'm not a role model. A lot of athletes want no parts of leadership. That's something we place on them. And it's something organizations place
on. Yeah.
And Le'Veon Bell is a guy, he don't want to lead. There's a lot of human beings like that. They want to follow. They want to tag along. They want to be caught up in your backdraft or tailwind. They want to ride your coattails. They want to do all. They all want to check. But in terms of leadership, he wants no parts of that. And so if it's a red flag to me if the Jets foolishly thought, hey, man, we're going to cut you a check. Pittsburgh wouldn't give you what you wanted. No one else in the league really was going to give you what you want. And if they thought cutting him that check was going to make him want to be a leader, he does not want any part.
There are different ways to lead. Can you lead by example? Can you lead by example from afar? Here's the thing. When training camp starts, you're going to realize, I don't give a damn what I've been doing. Whatever he's been doing has been better for him. And now I need to catch up to that. So did you want a leader that's going to give you the apple every single day and be in your office and be in the facilities? Or do you want a guy who's just going to show up when it matters most?
Oh, let's say this about Le'Veon Bell. He's just not a leader in any regard, in any way. He's not. He's been suspended twice.
No, but he set out all of last year.
Yeah, you can't say he's not a leader in any regard. Because what he produces on the football field, it has guys first following league. What he's trying to do. Period.
The league you can't get into the league without a lot of talent. You can't even get into a trial with a lot of talent. A lot of guys in the league can perform.
Not to that level.
And
you don't roll James out of bed and become late.
Absolutely not.
Did James Conner just come in and basically put up almost identical?
No, in the first four games, yeah. And then what had happened was injuries, and damn, they are focusing in on me. So, no, you're not Le'Veon Bell, but I hear you.
I just don't think he wants any part of leadership. I hope the Jets didn't think they were signing a leader. They signed a guy that's going to show up and play, and that's it.
I get leader, and I'm not expecting leader, but I am expecting you to be a part of. And you are one of the most unique running. But can we say this? His style of running is as unique as anybody
something
in the league.
Something offensive line would have to get used to.
That is something. You want that familiarity. You have Sam Darnold, who played with no running game. Now you have a guy who's a wide receiver as much as a running back. I'd like to just see, like, I'm here. I'm not here just for the check. I'm here to make us all better. And it doesn't have to be, some of it has to be on the field, but it also has to be just a feeling with this young group that I'm going to be more, I'm not looking for leadership. I'm just looking be part of. And he's basically said, hey, look, when it starts, I'll be ready.
Whitlock and Wiley, Jim Jackson's back with us. Time to get antisocial. I got my Twitter off here.
All right.
I got a looser jacket on today so I can keep it on.
What's going on?
All right, Darnell, what's popping on those Twitter streets?
Yes, sir. We're going to start off with last night's Met Gala.
Oh, Lord.
Holla. For all the stars and celebs were dressed to impress, Katy Perry was literally lit, showing up as a life-size chandelier. Jared Leto had heads turning, carrying a replica of his own head. And last but not least, you know my boy OBJ came with the drip. Wearing an all-black vest, pleated skirt, and high-heeled boots. And Danelle Pumphrey tweeted at him saying, boy, hell no. Bro got all that bread, and this is what he showed up in? We know OBJ is going to be able to do stuff like this in Cleveland. Do you think he already misses New York?
Oh, that's cold.
I think he already misses common sense, but I'll leave it at
that. Oh,
us two, let's talk. Because we're going to leave Jimmy out of this because you might be the one that could pull that off. But we're not fashionistas. And I look at these kids today. They don't match. They wear all different kind of brands and just do whatever. Like, if you are doing normal stuff now, you ain't fashionable. So respect to those who can do it, but I ain't.
The clean look is great. And we're old, bro. But the dress thing, I can't get down with it, bro. You can do the tight stuff and do some different stuff, but the...
Hold on, why you drawing a line there? Because some people say, why are you even doing the tight stuff? Then you're going to say, I do the tight stuff, but not the skirt?
I mean, not the slim fit. Kind of like, you know, it's cut.
I've seen you out before, Jimmy.
Yeah, but I ain't had the tight stuff on. And I definitely ain't have on no dress. That ain't going to happen, partner.
People call it a kilt online.
Hey, listen, but that's their culture. Okay, yeah. I get the kilt part.
I'm trying to... The difference between a kilt and a mini skirt. What's the difference?
A man wears it, I guess.
A mini skirt? Well, like JJ Fad?
I'm too old for this.
Way too old.
We're like mad about it.
How dare they wear those kilts?
My father's watching from upstairs, and trust me,
he ain't letting that happen.
Man.
All right, guys.
Okay,
so
go ahead.
Friend of the show, my guy Chris Haynes, had NBA prospect John Morant on his podcast recently, and it sounds like Ja just created a brand new position for himself. Take a listen.
Do you have an attribute or are you just a basketball player?
I'm a point guard.
You're a point guard, huh?
God.
Oh, excuse me, point guard. Excuse me, I missed that. Point guard. Yeah. That's the difference between a point guard and a point guard.
Yeah.
What makes you a point guard, Ja?
The ability to not only make plays for me, but also my teammates. It's everything I bring to the table, honestly. I try to play all around game and do whatever I can to help my team win.
You have a problem with Morant calling himself a point guard?
Nah, not really. I don't know. I couldn't get past the damn shirt. Was this backstage at the Matt Gale too?
I mean, wait, while we at it, then.
Hey, we're like, we old, bro. Yeah, hey. Go back to that.
While we at it, did y'all check the lighting out on Chris?
Oh, my God. Oh,
it did look good.
I was waiting for the commercial break.
You just saw his teeth.
He was like talking like this.
Oh, no, Chris, that's wrong. I was waiting for the commercial break, man. That's wrong.
Hey, Halloween at the gala. Hey, I'm like, I can't see it. Where'd he go?
Hey, listen, maybe it was God talking to Morant. You just heard somebody talking.
He looked like he in hell. Let me stop. Look, if you ain't seen a dude play, you got a problem with this. But if you seen a play, woo!
Here's my thing, though.
That's what
his definition was. He does a lot of stuff. There's a lot of guys in the NBA that do that. Okay, nah. Westbrook is one of them. That does a lot of stuff. Well, as athletic, like that.
Did he come in like that?
Westbrook, he was that athletic?
Yeah. He was dunking and driving but he wasn't dishing.
I know, but he wasn't playing. I mean, Westbrook was in school 1 year.
I don't care how you got there.
That's how long John Morant was.
No, I love John. Yeah. I love him. But what he's saying is that what he's bringing to the table is no different than what a lot of guys are bringing.
It is.
What?
He's highly pitched in athleticism, like Westbrook, but higher pitched in terms of being a facilitator than Westbrook was at the same stage. That's all.
I got nothing but love for him.
No itty bitty there.
No.
After the Bucks beat the Celtics last night, Giannis was asked about the impact of Marcus Smart's return. Take a listen.
Marcus Smart's return to the game tonight. So does he make an impact on the game tonight? So does he make an impact on the game tonight?
Chris, look at Chris. We know Giannis been balling, but we haven't seen his edgy side of him. Do you guys like seeing his side?
We haven't seen his edgy side. Is there another side? All he shows is, I'm not playing with y'all stars. Y'all ain't playing.
Bam, right there.
I ain't Hollywood. I ain't working out with y'all. Like, I have not seen the fluffy side except that Hulu commercial. And he got paid to be fluffy.
I saw him when he was young talking about he wanted to be in the NBA. But for a guy like Giannis, it's like, listen, I don't really want to mess with y'all in the summertime.
None of y'all.
I don't want to be friends. I don't want to hang out.
Nope.
I'm trying to be the best I could be. So right there was class. He was like, yeah, he did play, but what did he? I see he got some minutes, but other than that, his impact was like, I mean, I love it.
That's so cool.
Silly question. He should have just hit it with a next question.
Oh, yeah.
All right, time now for Darnell's question of the day. Take it away.
All right, guys, so it was the second annual Black Masters for the NBA on TNT crew this weekend.
Is Chris Haynes there?
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, come on. Come on,
Chris Haynes Masters.
He won.
Anyway, Charles Barkley highlights are hilarious, and we know Chuck obviously loves playing golf, but he's pretty bad at it. So it got me thinking, is this something you guys love to do but you're terrible at?
Dieting.
You don't love to do it.
Yeah. Do you love the diet?
Yeah, I do.
You like starting them?
You like,
yeah, I love it.
Day one, I'm killing day one every time.
You know what I love to do?
Love
to sing.
Oh,
can't sing a lick.
Let us hear it. Let us hear it.
Let's hear it. Come on, let's go. Something.
Let me think.
Come on.
I can't. Now you put me on
the
spot.
Iceberg. Why are you picking a song? You can't sing.
I can't sing.
Let's go. Sometimes I dream. Give me something.
Sometimes I dream that he is me. I want to be like Luther Vandross.
That was horrible.
That was terrible.
Karaoke.
But listen, in the shower, I'm awesome, bro.
Yeah, of course. The acoustics. Like,
what? You can't tell me nothing.
I am horrible at basketball, despite the stereotype. I can't walk to a gym. I get picked first every time. The first
big black
game.
New ball. Yeah. You got to be able to hoop.
That first game. Then after that, they'd be like, that second game, they'd be like, let's run it back. Hey, Wiley, you going somewhere? Like, what the hell? So I am horrible at basketball.
You know what? I just started playing PS4 again.
What?
I've taken a break from video games for like 20 years. I'm starting to play 2K. Love to play it, but I'm
horrendous at it.
Really?
I mean, literally, and I take it very seriously.
Yeah.
But I'm horrible at it. So that, and then I was, they asked me not to say this in the pre-show. In my 20s, loved sex, but I was horrible at it.
I think that's par for the course. But
man. Hey, listen. Hey,
We on Fox.
What is your last show?
Coming up.
Yeah, coming up.
Whitlock and Wiley, Greg Jennings, and Rick Bucher are back. Let's move to the New York Football Giants, who took quite a bit of heat a couple of weeks ago after drafting Duke quarterback Daniel Jones with the 6th overall pick. General Manager Dave Gettleman tried to defend the decision, but it isn't looking better this week. After a report surfaced that one team at the combine actually asked Jones if he would work out as a tight end instead of a quarterback. Question here is more proof the Giants made a mistake drafting Daniel Jones at number 6. I don't know if we need any more proof. I think the Giants had him overvalued. Anytime you're talking about a quarterback, they ask to switch positions. That's normally a guy that gets drafted at the end of the first round or second or third round. Giants made a bad pick. He may try to be a good player. They didn't have to take him to 6.
Damn, I want to defend Daniel Jones.
I do too.
I mean, I'm trying. Like, I'm a public defender at heart. Like, I look for anything, be the contrarian, I got to defend you. And look, the jury's out on Lamar Jackson in terms of someone who was asked to switch a position and had success, 6-1 as a starter in the regular season. But damn, the list of guys who they asked to play different position, including Matt Jones, who I played with, Julian Edelman, Tim Tebow, Terrell Pryor. They ask you because they're doing you a favor. They're like, if you really want to help your career out, you want to switch. That said, there's a value conversation that's getting lost in this in terms of, is Daniel Jones a good quarterback or he was just taken too high? Which, look, that's not on Daniel Jones. Maybe he's going to develop into something. I know the guy is 6'5", 220, and can run. He'll beat Dwayne Haskins by 41 yards in a 40. Like, he will lap him. So you got something to build on in terms of talent. But just because they reach for him, he's just going to have to hear it until he shuts them up.
Well, it's a mixed bag here. Are we criticizing where they took him or that they took him? Because if you want to say they took him too high, okay, so fine. But if he was their guy, if you're questioning whether he's a quarterback or not, you have the sign-off of the Mannings who have seen him. You've got it with Dave Cutlass, who knows the Mannings and knows this quarterback. Yep. We've seen other guys. I need to know who this team is that was going to try him out at tight end. If it's the Denver Broncos, they haven't demonstrated to me that they know how to pick a quarterback. So maybe it's on them. If it's the Buffalo Bills, I need to know who the team is as opposed to immediately going, oh, see, there's another team in the NFL that doesn't see him as a quarterback.
I'm joking.
I stand down. But didn't we hear some of the same innuendo about Lamar Jackson?
Yes.
He's not a quarterback. He should be going. People should be playing wide receiver.
The jury is still out, though.
The jury's still out, but the jury is probably leaning toward, I don't think he should have played wide receiver. I think he has a chance of playing quarterback, and quarterback's a much more important position than wide receiver.
Well, I think the jury's still out on Lamar Jackson, but as far as Daniel Jones, I think the problem is the reach of where he went. Simply put, I think he has the potential to be a good quarterback, great quarterback. That's on him and his work ethic and the time that he puts in. But when I hear a general manager trying to validate why they took a player this high in the first round, that lets me know that you probably reached too far already. When you're talking about, I can guarantee there were other teams that we believe that we're going to try to. I don't need to hear that. If you are sold on this guy and you believe he is the future of your franchise, I don't need to hear who you thought was going to take him. You show me that you were all in on him and you just ride with the pick.
Okay, so he's a bad defense attorney. Does that make this a bad pick? He's not explaining it well, but if ultimately this is a guy, I just had this conversation with Dan Orlovsky about the challenge for a young quarterback coming into an NFL team. You have to be a guy and you have to be the guy at the same time. And that's not something that is measured by an 80-yard cannon or by some of the things that you see on tape. It's a matter of, can you play that role? If they know that about him because of all the inside intel that they have, that's a difficult thing to explain to the public. And maybe the Gettleman's not doing that. But I'm not going to take that as a referendum that they got the pick wrong. Maybe they're not explaining why they took it well, but that's a different argument.
Well, you're talking about being a guy and the guy. He has to be that. When you take a guy in the first round as your number one pick, you're saying he's a guy and he is the guy.
Not this situation, because Eli is the buffer, though.
But my point...
Usually you're correct, but this one is different.
My point is, if you take him at number six, you're saying... He's going to compete for this starting job.
This year?
Absolutely. We understand who Eli is. He's giving you possibly potential time, but if he is the guy that they want him to be and he can showcase that, you telling me they're going to say, no, Eli, we'll ride with you. No, absolutely. They're going to roll with him.
This is a situation. If I'm Daniel Jones, I'm not getting caught up in all this controversy and the skepticism because – as an athlete, you always use comps. So you got to just, you know, we always get compared to somebody in rankings. If I come out and I'm Daniel Jones, in my own mind, I'm thinking I was better than Tom Brady at this moment. Now, am I going to ever be Tom Brady? Probably hell no. But the point is, that's what you're going to use as fuel and motivation to go get it because they think more of you, even in the reach, than the greatest quarterback of all time. If I'm Daniel Jones, I'm finding some solace in that. I'm finding that's going to be my resting place until I show my production.
All I know is that last year, we had all of these guys that were supposed to be the guy, and it was smart to move up to take them. Baker Mayfield actually was not supposed to be the guy. Exactly. The Cleveland Browns made a mistake taking him number one. Ultimately, how did that turn out? So I'm going to take a step back when it comes to determining already that we know who Daniel Jones is and we know whether Kyler Murray was the number one pick or not because of what? Because of their resumes and because the Cleveland Browns couldn't explain well enough what it was that the intangibles that Baker Mayfield brought to their team. Mm-hmm. Baker Mayfield ultimately showed it, and that's going to be on Daniel Jones to do the same.
All right, before we go, I'd like to say a few words about Jalen McKenzie, the junior high football phenom, shot dead by a stray bullet in East St. Louis late Saturday night. The 14-year-old McKenzie was one of 17 St. Louis area residents shot over the weekend, a list that included a 15-year-old girl shot at the same house party where McKenzie was murdered. The reason we know McKenzie's name and not the other 16 others is because of his football prowess. He'd been featured in Sports Illustrated as a future NFL star. The University of Missouri and Illinois had already offered the eighth grader full-ride scholarships. Jalen is the real-life Ricky, the star running back gunned down in the iconic movie Boys in the Hood. In the three decades since the release of Boys, a movie that piggybacked the rise of West Coast gangster rap music, the culture of random gun violence across America's urban cities hasn't dissipated or diminished. I'd argue it's calcified to the point of cultural acceptance. Anyone who dare expresses public outrage over the routine weekend mass shootings pervasive in black urban communities is shouted down as a sellout. Or actually, there's a new buzz phrase popularized by black elites, respectability politics, a phrase that denigrates Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s tactic of using respect as a weapon to undermine bigots. How dare black people use the same tactic as our greatest leader? No. What we should do is burn down our own communities and shout Black Lives Matter, but only when a white police officer shoots a black suspect. It's susceptibility politics. Let me know when susceptibility politics accomplishes 1% of what Dr. King and his generation accomplished. Asking us to respect ourselves is a no-no in the culture. Glorifying violence, criminal behavior, and disrespect, and pretending that police violence is the real menace in black communities are paths that lead to the mainstream media designating you as a black cultural gatekeeper. On his Twitter bio, Philadelphia rapper Meek Mill lists his city of residence as Killadelphia. Being from a city ravaged by urban terrorism is a source of pride in the culture. This goes well beyond the rap stars building brands off black violence. I know too many black men who brag about being from violent communities. If we want fewer Jalen McKenzie tragedies, we have to embrace a cultural change. Music sets the mood. It establishes a tone. It influences the mind, spirit, and body. Our deaths have been set to music. The music has normalized the behavior of black male murder to the point that we just accept it. We don't fight it. We've embraced it as our brand, a badge of honor. In the aftermath of McKenzie's death, Carl Reed, a high school football coach in St. Louis, tweeted this: 17 people shot in St. Louis yesterday, including the devastating loss of one of our brightest young future stars in this city. This city has no value for life. This city eats their young. RIP, young bull. Too many urban cities value death more than life. You can hear it in the music we say represents our culture. Saturday on Fox, there's a big championship fight. Undefeated IBF WBA champ Swift Jared Hurd puts his super welterweight title on the line as he takes on top contender Julian J. Rock Williams. Saturday at 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific on Fox and the Fox Sports app.
Mm. You all right, man? You're struggling with that, man.
Welcome back.
You good, man?
Tupac is still struggling.
Take it out, man.
Whitlock and Wiley, Jim Jackson and Rick Bucher are back. Let's return to the NBA playoffs,
man,
where the future of a couple of superstars could be affecting what's happening on the court. And Houston fans chanted New York Knicks at Kevin Durant, and Klay Thompson had a terrible game after Adrian Wojnarowski reported he might join the Clippers if the Warriors don't give him a max contract. Meanwhile, in the East, Kyrie Irving shot just 7-for-22 in what could be his final game in Boston as a member of the Celtics. The question here, gentlemen, is free agency speculation why the Warriors and the Celtics are struggling?
I'm the wrong person to answer this. I played in the NFL, not for long. Even when you got paid, you were still a free agent because we could cut your butt any second and not give you a dime more. So emotional uncertainties about my teammates never translated and materialized on the field. With these situations in particular, I don't see that's why Steph is bricking and then next game hitting them, but still not the same Steph. I don't see why Klay is in a funk because of what's going on with Durant. I don't see that the issue is, oh, Kyrie's playing his worst he's ever played in the postseason, but because he's going to leave to the Knicks or to the Lakers, that's why we're playing not up to our level. So for me, I don't see how it materializes.
The guaranteed money is different in the NBA than it is in the NFL. The guarantee of where you're going to play is not really all that different. Andre Iguodala and I had this conversation because I was asking him about, has this season been different? And he said, we've lost 4 or 5 guys every year. So it just depends on how familiar you are with that change. Now, maybe with the Celtics, as young as they are, this is having an impact. The idea, though, that KD leaving or Klay Thompson possibly leaving is changing the mentality of the Warriors, it's not a matter of the possibility that they would leave. It's how they're acting within the team with that possibility. If they're still all in and getting the job done now, then there's no difference because you know come the offseason, depending on what your team accomplishes or fails to accomplish, there may be changes anyway.
Mm. So what you're saying is that with – in Golden State situation, it's KD buy-in, you play well, not talking about it, and it kind of works, but it's other issues with Golden State. And my issues with Golden State has always been complacency because it's hard to do what they've been doing the last 5 years and still have the same kind of motivation, desire, and the drive to get it done, thinking that you can just turn it on. And that was a big concern for Steve Kerr. My issue with Kyrie is if you're not totally bought in, then the little things you need to do as a leader, you're not going to do. And that's what I seen with Kyrie, because he sent mixed messages at the beginning. And I want to stay, I want to sign, I want the jersey to hang. Then as you filter through the season, don't talk to me about free agent, I don't know, I'm going to be a leader. All these things. So I do think the free agency and not buying in all the way, maybe with Kyrie, has had an effect on Boston's side, okay? Because you got other guys in there like, I can go in there and do the job. Just put me in.
Yes.
If Kyrie is not in, use me. I want to be here.
And they accomplished an awful lot without him last year. So the feeling is.
And Gordon Hayward. y'all can't keep overlooking the dude against 2 points for 20
minutes. No, I said this from the beginning.
Wait, you're leaving one other thing out.
What?
The contract.
And the contract.
Hold on, you got to play him. I said this from the beginning.
I'm disgusted.
If I'm management, I try to trade that contract early in the season before anybody gets a look at him.
Yeah.
That eliminates all of that. That allows Jaylen Brown to play his position.
Porzingis.
The thing is with Gordon Hayward, he hasn't – the Boston fans haven't grown an affection with him. So you can get rid of that contract without, why'd you do this? Or you should have given him a chance. It was a smart business decision for me early on while he was recuperating. Now you eliminate that.
But you know what? The mind game – selective perception, the psychologist would tell us right now, you're doomed as soon as the conversation is introduced that you may be going somewhere. Because all you do is look at it from that scope.
Right.
Like Kyrie leaving a game, it's 10 seconds on a clock and they can't get another possession. They already lost. If he's staying, we're saying Kyrie can't even be there. He's so disgusted at the losses, he's coming back with vengeance. But when we know that he may be going, we're like, oh, look at me.
You're already out the door, right?
In every situation, Kevin Durant. Oh, Kevin Durant is giving them buckets right now because you know what? He's all in. Oh, no, no, no. He's just giving them buckets because you know what? He's going to say bye-bye. I left him with my best. So there's no winning as soon as this conversation is introduced.
This is where, well, there is a way to win. And it's if you introduce it right at the very beginning. As the Chicago Bulls did in 1998.
They said it was the last.
When they said it's the last. Yep. Phil Jackson embraced the fact that this was the last run. That, for me, is the mistake that the Warriors made. Mm. Because in training camp, they were pretending, oh, no. We're not the Chicago Bulls. We're going to have fun this year, and we'll see where it's going to go. And KD's saying, I could have signed a long-term contract. And Draymond Green is saying, I'm going to be a Warrior for a long time. And Clay's saying, I'm perfectly content here. And then suddenly you have the dust up between Draymond and KD, and now you have all this friction, and nobody wants to address the elephant in the room, which is, oh, wait a minute. We're not as good as we thought we were, and we may be losing the piece that was the finals MVP the last 2 years. It's too late to create that rallying cry now. You're just looking at the possibility that, hey, the selling point was supposed to be, KD, why would you leave if you could win four in a row?
Well, let me push back on that. In 1998, the media was a shark. One entity, two entities. Now it's piranha, bro. You get in that water, everyone has an opinion. There are thousands, millions of entities. You think that would have held up in today's world, just saying, this is our last year? You think that holds up?
No. It would have been better, though. I think we all agree. Free agency has bothered both of these teams in some fashion. Uncle Jimmy's here, dressed in a, you got my suit on, it looks like.
That's for real.
Too big for you.
All right, what'd that tell you?
You got any thoughts? It tells me nothing. Well, you got any thoughts on the show?
Hey, man, let's hurry and get to this big dummy of the day.
Yeah, please.
Hey, man, the big dummy of the day go to the person that just sat up here and said that they like sex, but they just wasn't good at it. You ain't no way in hell you a member of my family sitting up there talking like that. I damn it, we come from a long line of men that say, fake it till you make it. The hell wrong with you?
That's what she said.
Here's a highlight from our discussion earlier about James Harden.
Oh, wow.
James Harden is tough. Last week, I mocked his eye injury. I said he was more interested in sympathy than championships. Boy, was I wrong.
We know that Houston is all about the math and Daryl Morey and hit the threes or go to the free throw line or get to the rim. And they're winning in the math and they're winning in the mentality.
All right, Uncle Jimmy, you got any thoughts? What's your take on James Harden and the Houston Rockets?
Hey, man, I was watching the game last night.
Yeah.
I was watching James Harden. I said, damn, James Harden playing like a man on fire. That's when I had my epiphany.
Your what?
My epiphany. Yeah, well. Remember that Denzel Washington movie,
oh,
Man on Fire?
Good movie, yeah. Good movie.
You know, a retired special ops specialist, Denzel Washington?
Yeah.
Somehow or another he got
greasy,
stuck.
Greasy, I think they called him.
Yeah, greasy, yeah. Greasy.
Yeah.
Somehow or another he got stuck babysitting that little white girl. Lupica. Yeah, Lupica.
Yeah.
Dakota Fanning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that's the only thing we got going on right here. James Harden, somehow or another, done got stuck babysitting Chris Paul.
Man. You calling Chris Paul
Ooh.
The little 9-year-old white girl in Man on Fire?
Right after his
Have you thing. Ever looked? You ever looked in Chris Paul's eyes? Chris Paul got some pretty ass eyes. Dakota Fanning got some pretty ass eyes.
Good point.
Look here, man. Look here. Denzel Washington's character, Greasy, had to give up his life in order to restore Dakota Fanning's to get Lupica back.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what's gonna happen here. And remember at the end of the movie, Denzel dies.
Yeah,
yeah.
See, James Harden just trying to restore some dignity to Chris Paul. Golden State's holding his dignity hostage. And James Harden just wanna negotiate. But he know at the end of it, He ain't gonna make it out alive.
I'm trying. So you think James Harden is gonna be successful in his efforts to defend Chris Paul, but the Houston's not gonna win the series?
He gonna die at the end. Mm. He's making $160 million and can't hold Steph Curry. He can't hold nobody.
You talking about Chris Paul?
Yeah, Chris. Look here, man, anybody holding Steph Curry is supposed to average 40 points a night. Steph got a bad ankle, bad eyes. Remember in the first game of the series, James Harden taped his hands to the steering wheel, made him hold a half a stick of dynamite and blew his fingers off. Just like the dude did in the movie.
Yeah.
Okay? So, look here, man. If you can't, if you can't average 40 points on Steph, hell, Dale Curry hit 30 points on him in the driveway last week. He ain't even the number one star in his own family no more. Hell, Riley took his picture down and put Seth's up. Yeah. I'm just telling you, bro. I'm telling you what God like. What'd he say? An eye for an eye. What the hell James Harden got to do? He done lost an eye. Hey, man, Chris Paul got to earn some of that $160 million, man.
Have we hey, look, you down?
Who's TJ winning the Hooker, series?
What?
T.J. Hooker, Doc Rivers' son?
P.J.
Carrying Chris Paul like that? No. Chris Paul got to get out here and earn some of this, man.
P.J. Tucker. Who's winning the series, quickly?
And why you got to ask?
Who's winning the series?
Who the hell think going to win it? The cartel. Golden State. You don't mess with the cartel.
All right, let me get to my approval rating.
He gonna die at the end.
He gonna die.
I got James Harden at an 81, GOAT status 24, job performance 20, all-time greatness 18, character 19, authenticity. I gotta apologize. I was down.
You had him low before.
Yeah. GOAT.
Hey, he's right by GOAT status. I give him superstar the way he's playing, job performance. Two-time MVP, rarefied air, bounce back from that eye and character. He milked it at first, but you know what? The authenticity had to go up as well. I thought he was just faking it, but nah, he's for real, and he got toughness. I got love for him. 79.
And so, just so we're clear, Uncle Jimmy, the Golden State Warriors are a cartel. Is that what
James Harden is a dead man walking.